Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Tuesday morning. So we're trying to stay as fresh as we possibly can. So thanks for hanging in with us for a little bit later with this posting. But I am in Boston, where I went to the Eastern Conference Finals Game 4 last night, which we'll talk about in a second. Joining me are a couple of guys in Texas. First, in Austin, the professor, the author of Sprawl Ball, which is on the wall behind him, is Kirk Goldsberry. Hi, Kirk.
Hello, Brian. I hope you're having a good time in Boston, and I hope that these series get a little more interesting for you as you fly back and forth between Boston and Miami.
Do you know how many lead changes there have been in the Eastern Conference Finals through four games?
I haven't seen this, so hit me.
What's the minimum number of lead changes you can have in a four-game series?
Well, I'm a numbers guy. I think that number could get to zero.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess if no one's... Anyway, there's been four.
Okay, that's awful.
You are allotted one per game. I hope you enjoy it early on. There were none, I'll tell you, in the in last night's game, because it was 18-1 out of the gate, if you want to compare it to a horse race, which I would not. Joining us in Dallas, where he's covering the Western Conference Finals tonight, will be game four of that series as the Mavericks look to avoid a sweep, is Om Yongmasook. Hey, Om, what's up?
What up, Wendy? Very curious to see if the Warriors will blow their third straight first crack at a closeout in the series. They could not do it on their first opportunity against Denver. They obviously got waxed in that game five at Memphis when they were down by 55 at one point. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting tonight if they can close out the Mavs.
Well, the Warriors are known for many things, and most of them are positive, but they might just be remembered for not being able to close out a series, one series in particular that I think some people may remember. After blowing the 3-1 lead, the next year, the Warriors were up 3-0 on the Cavs in the finals, and then the Cavs won game four, making everybody go back out to Oakland, and to play game five. And it did make the Warriors, 20 million extra dollars because they got to have another home game, but they had to cancel their championship party and parade for the fourth consecutive time. The Cavs got beat, lost the title that year, but they did make the Warriors cancel one more, party. It's been an unfortunately uncompetitive conference finals round so far. Not so much that the series in the East isn't close. Obviously, it's 2-2, but all the games have been lopsided for the most part. Game three did come down to the final minutes, but you never really felt like the Heat were going to lose that game. But it's been unfortunate what's happened. It's not, I guess, surprising at this point, but the injuries have become a massive story in this series. And I think it's interesting going forward. You know, I think the Warriors, if they needed extra motivation to try to close out the Mavericks, just look at what's happening in the East series. Guys are dropping left and right. On these game days, I'm doing television all day long. And like, you know, typically when you talk about these games on TV, you know, you have to be a little shorter than we are here in the radio, not just a little shorter, a lot shorter, but you can bring up some topics to look at, like some strategy points, like what did you hear from the coaches and players at shoot around? And we spend the entire time asking the coaches and the players, like, how about your injuries? And yesterday, Eric Spoelstra's entire pregame media was covering like the six guys they had in their injury report. And the Heat, to their credit, projected a very, we're just fine. That's the way they kind of made it sound like when they were walking out of the arena last night. They were like, yeah, it's 2-2. You know, we're doing fine. We've got home court advantage. Eric Spoelstra said the word competitive six times in his post-game press conference. I know, because I counted. He kept saying it's a competitive series. It actually hasn't been a competitive series. But their guys, they're Jimmy Butler, his knee is really bothering him. He obviously had to come out of game three with this knee inflammation. He had this happen to him in the first time, in the first series against Atlanta, the first round. And in that series, he actually took like almost a week off. He skipped one game, but there was like 2 days off before it and 2 days off after it. And he had his worst game of the playoffs after that knee injury, the first round series. And he might have unfortunately surpassed that with the game that he had in game four on Monday night, because he was 3 of 14. And I remember one of the baskets that he made, he got so little lift on that jumper that he almost shot putted it. Like, it was the angle at which the ball went to the basket, it was like unnatural. So he can say whatever he wants. He just didn't look right. And Kyle Lowry is he's coming back from this hamstring. He's not right. He's 5 of 17 shooting. Tyler Hero is on the, missed the game. This, you know, Kirk, these are three of their best offensive players, and the Heat, you know, their challenge is scoring in the half court. And right now, you know, if you conclude Bam Adebayo, three of their four best offensive players are injured or hurting or limping or whatever. And even though it's 2-2 with the Heat having home court, I just don't know if they're going to be able to score enough points to be able to pull out two of these next three.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think if last night was any indication of what we're going to get from the Miami Heat, then the answer is no. So the question then becomes, will the Miami Heat get in shape quick enough to compete in games 5, 6, and potentially 7? Ultimately, Brian, I think you nailed it. This series is going to come down to that old NBA cliche: the best ability is availability. But it's got to be a little bit more than just availability for Jimmy Butler. You can see a version of him out there that looks like the best player of the league at times. And then you can see what we saw last night. So it's not just ability with Jimmy Butler. He needs to be the best version of himself. I think one of the things you can kind of tease out of these last two games is these are two of the best defenses in the league. And in game three, Miami asserted itself on defense with those ridiculous steals. I think they had 19 steals. And then last night,
I think they had 28 deflections or something in that game.
Yeah, when they're right, dude, they are hunting the basketball more than like any team I can remember in recent memory. Somebody's going to throw some reference out there and probably be correct. But they just took the Celtics lunch money all day in game three. And then, you know, the Celtics probably have a better defense statistically this year than Miami does. And last night, as banged up as Miami was, that was like, oh, we got Robert Williams. We have Al. We didn't even have the defensive player of the year, and we just held your starters to the lowest point total any starting group has ever had in the history of the playoffs since we've been tracking that stat 50 years ago, man.
Yeah, let me see.
So what can was one the of number? These
was
offenses
it 18
wake
points?
Up?
Was yeah. it 18?
Yeah. So let me just add this. This is going to come down to which offense can finally get over this defense they're looking at, and I think Boston has the advantage just because of what you're saying. Unfortunately, it's the injury situation. Boston's offense seems to be a little more whole. I'm interested to hear what Ohm says or you have to say. I think if I'm looking out in the next 3 years, I think Boston's offense will be able to answer the bell a little bit better than Miami's because of the injury situation facing both teams.
Hey, Wendy, you obviously have been around that Heat organization for a long time, and obviously I did a lot of those Knicks-Heat battles back in the 90s. First of all, Spo last night sounded very Riley-esque to me of mm-hmm. just trying to convince his team, like, let's get out of this. We are going to fight. We are going to be there. We're fine. You know, trying to turn the page as quickly as possible from that blowout. But to me, and I know Bam, obviously something has to be bothering him, right? Because I mean, it's just like what did he have last night? Like 5 shots or something like that? Yeah. Three for five. He has to be, I mean, I get it. Maybe it's not in his DNA at times to be aggressive or whatever it is, but that's the guy to me that I'm sure, Riley, Spo, everybody has to get into, that he has to be the guy to step up, especially Jimmy Butler's not himself. What I wanted to know, Wendy, was like, what, they didn't score their first field goal until like 3:33 or something like that in the first quarter. What was that like to watch, like the first like not nearly 9 minutes and not see a team make a field goal into that point?
Yeah, they missed their first 14 shots. It was 18-1, and really, like, the Celtics weren't exactly on fire. I think they shot like 42% in the first quarter. They shot under 40% for the game. After the game, Eric Spoelstra was like, well, I know for a fact we can play better on defense. And I was like, I guess schematically you can, but the Celtics were 8 of 34 on threes. The defensive performance was definitely good enough to win. There was a couple of blown bunnies in there. They blew a couple of layups. And there was a couple of times where they had good looks and the ball just rattled out. And you're like, boy, they're just absolutely ice cold. Nothing is going their way. But for the most part, the Celtics just shut them down. They were just like, look, you're not going to get past our first wave. They just were like, we're not allowing penetration. We're just not going to do it. And one of the things, you know, the Celtics are completely aware that those guys are hurting. They know that Jimmy's not right. They know that Lowry's not right. In game three, the Heat altered their offensive strategy a little bit, maybe because they knew that Jimmy was limping. You know, Jimmy had, this is all you need to know about Jimmy Butler. And I mean, he says he's going to be fine. It's his knee. Maybe he will be fine, but he had 26 free throws the first two games. He's had two in the last game and a half. He didn't play the second half. Yeah. So he's just not, you know, getting explosion. So what the Heat did in game three, and also because Bam Adebayo just wasn't much of a factor in the first two games, they decided to start running their offense kind of through Bam. They ran more pick and rolls with Bam as the screener in the first quarter of game three than they had in games one and two combined. So basically they were like, okay, Jimmy and Kyle are limping. Let's rely on Bam. And so, you know, the Celtics ran their normal switching defense, and they didn't have Robert Williams, and, you know, Bam kind of took advantage of them. So the Celtics altered their strategy and went to, I don't like to talk X's and O's because frankly, I can't do it like as well as some other people. Obviously I'm watching the game, but you know, they basically went into more drop coverage and they basically said, we're going to keep Bam in front of us. And so instead of Bam getting to the rim, or at least getting going toward the rim, like he was in game three, he had to take a lot of mid-range jumpers, and you could tell he wasn't comfortable. And so they basically just wanted to force him to not be able to have good looks. And so that's why he ends up with five shots.
And Brian, just jumping in on there, I think the Stats and Info Group did pull an incredible stat that in both these series for Miami, when Joel Embiid or Robert Williams was in the game, a traditional big center, and obviously both of those dudes are great defensive centers, Bam has had a hard time, not just scoring, but even shooting the basketball. And I think Robert Williams coming back, you know, I see the same thing with Bam, but let's not dismiss just how good Time Lord's impact can be. He's arguably the best defensive player on that team. He allows them to do all the switching stuff so well. And I think his return to the game actually did affect Bam. I just wanted to get that in there, Brian.
Yeah, let me just say that. Let me see a quick thing about the Celtics injuries. Marcus Smart, you know, so I don't know what Robert Williams' availability is going to be throughout the rest of the playoffs. As well as he played last night, and the Celtics crowd a couple of times just gave spontaneous standing ovations for the way that the Celtics were playing. They just applauded the defensive effort. I think Al Horford got two of them because Al Horford was extremely active defensively. Robert Williams came out of the game either after his first or second shift, and the crowd knew that he was fighting a little bit. Like there was one time where he blocked a shot. He came over with great rotation and blocked a shot, and it was obviously, you know, good play and impact defensive play, and he didn't really celebrate it because you could tell he was in pain when he landed. On he's got a bone bruise in his left knee, which also just had surgery, and so And Ime Udoka has said, like, we're not sure how Robert's going to do day to day. So, I mean, I have no firm insight on this, but just watching Robert Williams move last night, like, we'll see what he's on the injury report for later today. My guess is he'll be questionable. He's going to be fighting this. So I can't even say for sure how he's going to hold up. Marcus Smart was frankly limping. Now ankle injuries, you know, every 24 hours, they're going to improve significantly. So maybe he'll be just fine, but he's got to get on a 3-hour flight today, which won't help. But I'm sure that'll be wrapped way up on that flight. I'm sure he's one of those things where he will be getting whatever they possibly can do to that ankle all the time, with its ice, wrapping it, stem, whatever they do. So I'm not even sure where he's going to be at for that one. And Derek White, they had to call a timeout late in the game last night and take him out of the game. He was grabbing at his hamstring. So I don't know where he's at. So, you know, the Celtics, you know, if you're the Warriors, you got to be thinking, boy, let's get to the house. Let's get to the house here. Because obviously this series is going at least two more. And, you know, it's, at this point, it's every other day. And it's like play, fly all day. I mean, not all day, but it's, you know, it's big travel, you know, 3 hours up and down the coast. But, you know, getting back to what we were saying, you know, Robert Williams made an impact defensively. And the Heat, you know, if to be fair, the Heat, they would, you know, if Spo or Pat Riley were on here, and I talked to Pat briefly yesterday, and Pat took exception to me when I said that, you know, that he was all business. He goes, I can have fun, just not around you. Cause I was noting, you know, they were very much of the Heat were very much in their playoff mode yesterday, which I've seen for years. You know, their owner, Mickey Arison, he comes to shoot around. This is something that I mean, I'm obviously not in every team shoot around, but you know, Mickey Arison comes to the Heat's practices a lot and just sits there and is very quiet, just supportive in the side, knows what's going on with his team. And in the playoffs, he comes on the road and he comes to shoot around. I can't say I've ever seen another owner at shoot around. But Mickey comes, and he was there with his son, Nick, who is the team CEO, and the whole front office was there. And Pat was all business. And I said, boy, you're all business. He goes, I can have fun. Anyway, the Heat, if Pat was on here right now, he would probably say a lot of things to me, but he would say, listen, Max Strus went 0 of 7. You know, PJ Tucker went 0 of 4. Gabe Vincent went 2 of 10. You say, oh, you know, our only offensive players are the guys who are hurting. We have other offensive players. We have enough. Spo would say, we have enough. Spo would say competitive 8 times, and in other words, and say, we have enough. And like, that's fair. Like, you know, Victor Oladipo looked really good. It was his best offensive game, maybe as a Heat, certainly in this postseason. He had 23 points. Duncan Robinson actually hit 4 out of 8 3-pointers. So, you know, a couple of them were in garbage time, but I mean, he saw the ball go through the basket. You know, the Heat are going to need that, because I just don't know if they can score. You know, in game 3, the Celtics turned the ball over on 25% of their possessions, Ohm. 25% of their possessions. I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but I've never seen it in the playoffs. And that made them 33 points that the Heat got off turnovers. That's vital to them with their current situation, with their injuries and their current struggles offensively. And, you know, in game four, the Celtics had 3 turnovers in the entire first half. They had 7 points allowed off turnovers the entire game. I mean, 33 is not normal. 7 is not normal either. It's probably going to be somewhere in between there, but the Heat badly need those points. So, you know, I would really love to see a couple of competitive games here, but I'm having difficulty creating the case that Miami is going to win them.
Well, I mean, look, we've seen that the numbers are as ugly as you will ever see them from a starting 5 in a playoff game. I mean, the starters for Miami scored a total of what? It was like 18 points or something like that. I mean, it's just obscene. But the thing is, we've seen this a million times, you know, where a veteran playoff team was blown out, had their doors blown out. I was even thinking the same thing when I saw it was something I had never seen before. I had never seen a team fall behind by 55 in a game 5 in a playoff game like I did with the Warriors of Memphis. But I remember looking in the third quarter and seeing, you know, Steph on the sideline and Draymond, and they played whoop that, you know, the mantra in Memphis. And I remember seeing Draymond wave his towel, looking like literally joining the Memphis dancers on the floor and getting fans to get up and get into that song. And I remember thinking, Warriors are going to be fine the next game. And even as crazy it was when they were down 55, because I remember thinking veteran teams know how to bounce back. And in like that series where there's just no momentum created, the teams just keep bouncing back and bouncing back. Now, the only one thing I would say is obviously Miami's health is a major, major factor with that. But I tend to believe that the Heat will kind of come back, be competitive, play much better. And they just, that's that type of mentality we've seen from that franchise over and over again, barring the fact that Kyle Lowry can't really go and Jimmy Butler is done and they're shot. And of course, Boston knows that this is the game you have to get in Miami. This is the game, just like Golden State said the other night when they were going for game three, Draymond had said, we went all in on this game. This was the game that we wanted. We still had momentum from coming back in game two from 19 down. And this was the game that we had to get. And of course, with Boston, you know, this is the game you have to get in South Beach so that you can take it back and try to finish it off in Boston. But I would be very surprised if we see anything remotely close to the same effort we got last night from the Heat.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
So, Kirk, you think the, I wouldn't say any chance, but, you know, where do you view the balance in this series in terms of what the Heat's situation is?
Just because of injuries, I got to give the advantage to Boston. I think game five is the biggest game of the year in the Eastern Conference, as Ohm laid out for us. I think whoever wins that's going to have a chance to close out this series on their home floor. And I think that's a big deal if both teams are right. Now, Miami is not right. And to be fair to Boston, they're not right. They don't have the defensive player of the year and their point guard in their lineup as of yesterday. So it's going to come down to which team is more whole. And when I look at this series as four units, obviously Miami's defense is elite. Boston's defense is elite. Miami's offense is questionable. We're not going to see those numbers that we saw last night again, I don't think. But I think Boston's offense puts them over the top from what I've seen. They have Tatum. They have Jaylen Brown. They have players that can make shots. And they appear, guys, to just be healthier going into this huge game five than their counterparts in Miami do. So I'm giving the advantage to the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, that is a very annoying take for the Heat fans who are like, wait a minute, we're the number one seed. We've got home court. What are you talking about? We're fine. So I get it. I get it. All right, Ohm. Just disappointing the way this series has gone. I actually am disappointed in the Phoenix Suns. I'm still disappointed in the Suns.
I think the Phoenix Suns are disappointed in the Phoenix Suns, especially seeing how the series has gone so far.
Yeah. The way that they allowed themselves to lose leverage against the Mavericks the game seven performance remains a mystery. There's probably reasons why it happened, whether we'll ever find those out, you know, we'll see. But the Suns were better equipped to play the Warriors than the Mavericks are. The Mavericks just aren't equipped. They have some bad matchups. Playing against Golden State requires maximum discipline. And even though that the Mavericks are really were one of the best defensive teams in the league over the last, you know, third of the season or whatever it was. It's just, it's a big ask for them. And the Warriors have rediscovered the rhythm that they really had early in the season. I don't really think it's a commentary on Dallas or Luka. I think this is more of a commentary on the Warriors. How do you see it? You've been there.
I think you're right. I think the one thing we've noticed that's really kind of separated the Warriors from the Grizzlies and the Mavs is just their ability to sense a moment when they know this is the moment that we need to pick it up and we can win this game. We saw in the third quarter against Dallas the other night where Dallas is just missing shots or whatever. But even like when Dallas is up 19 in game two, and then all of a sudden they have all these open shots and they're just taking threes that are not making anything. They're not getting into paint. If you notice with Dallas, anytime they get into paint, good things happen. Like they're either going to draw a foul, they're either going to score, or they're going to kick it out and find a good open three as opposed to one that they just come down and make the first pass and hit the three. So like, the thing about the Warriors is they, you can see the championship DNA. You can see the championship experience from that core. And I think it's starting to rub off on the younger guys like Jordan Poole, where they are starting to sense these moments and then they take control of games. And that's the thing, the Warriors at the same time, you were just talking about the Phoenix Suns. I mean, they were able to take advantage of Memphis. Memphis gave them a really difficult time, even without Ja Morant. You think about the Phoenix Suns, I'm thinking from the standpoint of the Memphis Grizzlies looking at, had they somehow gotten that series to a seventh game and were able to pull that out somehow without Ja Morant, they could be looking at going to the NBA Finals. You know, I think Memphis would have won this series against Dallas. And I think somebody tweeted that to Ja Morant. Ja Morant said 100%, like, had they gotten past Golden State, they might be going to the NBA Finals. But I think
that's surprising. Difference. Ja having confidence on social media. I would have thought he said, no, we'll have to see. I don't know. It could have gone either way.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. What we're seeing though with Golden State is their championship DNA is coming out. They know. And that's the one thing though about this thing. They should know this moment right here. If they take care of business tonight, they will have over 1 week of rest. Game one of the NBA Finals is on June 2nd. That is unbelievable. That is like gold for them.
And
Otto Porter Jr. is banked up. Yeah, right? Otto Porter Jr. is doubtful tonight. So they need this type of rest.
If they win, they're guaranteed home court. I mean, they're guaranteed home court. So that's a factor too. They know that they'll rest and also be able to start at home. So just to point out.
They won't have to get on a plane for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks. That's huge.
Yeah, Kirk, I mean, I know that there's this desire for Luka to be able to carry his team. That was certainly what I wanted to see coming in. And, you know, right now people are kind of taking shots at the Mavericks. Boy, the supporting cast isn't good enough. It's still early in their cycle with Luka. I'm not, you know, gonna hit him. But I will say that the stat that I sort of walked away from in game three was that Luka has 8 40-point games in the playoffs in his career now. He passed Dirk and for most in Mavericks team history.
Yeah.
And they're 2-6 in those games. That says a lot about where the Mavericks are in this year, in this moment right now.
Yeah, I keep telling people this is Jordan versus Detroit, or maybe even LeBron versus Boston. Those early career series where you're up against the establishment, you're the upstart superstar. You're going to be fine, young man. You're going to be fine. But this is sort of the archetype in the hero quest in the NBA for one of the next main stars. The Golden State Warriors are just simply more thorough of a basketball team. They have too many weapons. We haven't even seen Klay Thompson really have that Klay Thompson game yet this series. They have Jordan Poole. Of course, they have Stephen Curry, Draymond Green. And then Kevon Looney comes out and wins a game and has been so important for this team. They're just deeper. And I say this out of respect to the Mavs. Their supporting cast isn't good enough to get over this hump this year. They're very good. They deserve to be here, in my opinion. They won a game 7 on the road against the defending Western Conference champions. But like Om alluded to, this is sort of also familiar from a Warriors perspective. This is a very heliocentric offense they're facing. This is a dribble, dribble, dribble. I'll figure you out. And if you help on me, I'm going to find an open shooter. That is the James Harden James Harden Rockets. And what we're seeing in a familiar refrain is those open shots aren't going in. Ohm already hit this, but the Dallas is shooting 33% in this series on wide open threes. That's not good enough. They made 48% of them in the last round, 46% of them in the first round. And so, you know, Maxey really didn't look confident when he got the ball in that last loss. Those are the kinds of supporting players at home that you need to be making those shots. You know, my friend Matt Bonner, you know, when the Spurs, when that ball finds you and you're open in the playoffs, you need to make those shots. If you want to beat the Golden State Warriors, you can't shoot poorly from behind the three-point line, especially when you're wide open, because this is a defense that doesn't give you a lot of opportunities like that. So ultimately, yeah, I think it's Golden State's defense more than it's Dallas's offense. I want to give them credit. They have sort of come into form here, Brian. This is just the championship DNA. They're a more thorough team, and they're going to win this series largely because they're more complete than the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, people talk about the depth of the Warriors, and, you know, Andrew Wiggins has played very well. He played great, one of the best games he's played all season in game three. This is the thing you have to point out about the Warriors. Andrew Wiggins is, at best, their fourth best player. On some nights, he's their seventh best player. He makes $33 million. The fourth best player on the Warriors makes $33 million. And, you know, this is the thing. The Warriors have done a really good job of acquiring and retaining talent. But they spend a ton of money. Maybe five years ago, I'm not sure exactly what year it was, they surpassed the Lakers in terms of their revenue to become the number one revenue team in the league. That was still when they were in Oracle. This arena is one giant money generation machine, which it weaves for a while with the COVID, and the Warriors ownership just had to sell off some equity in the arena and the team, and they were able to generate like $500 million. You know, lickety split because they're of their value. And so I don't want to put down Bob Myers or Steve Kerr or anybody, but it's really nice to have a $33 million third or a fourth option, right? Who, if he has a bad night, you know, okay, no big deal. We'll just put him over here and nobody will mention it. And that's just, you know, Jordan Poole might even push Wiggins to their fifth best player, depending on the night. And Jordan Poole's on his rookie contract. He's about to get paid. So, you know, part of this is just, you know, the Warriors' might is showing up in this playoff run now that they're fully healthy. Let me ask you a question here. And this isn't a summer contract question. And it's not always appropriate to talk about that when you're in the middle of the playoffs, but something I've wondered as I've watched the Warriors this postseason. So Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins both have 1 year left on their contract. Poole's is like for less than $2 million or around $2 million because he was the 27th or 26th or 27th pick in the draft, and he's on his rookie deal. I mentioned Andrew Wiggins makes over $30 million. I mean, he maybe make 31 this year and it's 33 next year, whatever it is. He's got 1 year left on his contract. Both of them are eligible for extensions this offseason. And look, I don't know what Joe Lacob's budget is. I know that he's paying, you know, enormous luxury tax, you know, some of the most luxury tax of all time. They're spending, you know, like upwards of $400 million on their payroll. And when you include the tax, maybe he'll sign Poole and sign Wiggins and be like, we got a ton of money. Chase Center has got concerts again. Everything's fine. But if they have to choose between Poole and Wiggins, and this isn't just a contract question, it's just an evaluation of a value question, and they can't keep both of them just because at some point there's some figure that they can't afford, who do you think they would choose?
This is a really tough question. I mean, if obviously you had asked me this after the first two or three games of the Denver series, you would easily say it was Jordan Poole, because Jordan Poole was looking like almost like he could be the next maybe closest thing that they might have to another Steph Curry. That's just how great he was at the beginning of that series. But then you're coming off this game where Andrew Wiggins was so impactful for them on so many sides. This series has been very impactful defensively on Luka Doncic. Yes, Luka's putting up good numbers, but if you watch the games, I mean, Wiggins is doing a pretty good job on him, as good of a job as they can have. And then, you know, obviously he had the big dunk. He's scoring inside. He's been very active. And Steve Kerr had said this yesterday that when they lost Kevin Durant, he said a lot of people lost sight of the fact that we lost almost our entire wings. All of our wings were gone after 2019 due to the injuries to Klay Thompson, due to losing Kevin Durant. And he was just like, basically like that we needed that position so bad. And you see what Andrew Wiggins is doing. Almost all the Warriors have been saying over the last 24 plus hours since that game of just how, like they, I was a little surprised by this, but they were all like, we wouldn't be here without Andrew Wiggins. Now, are they trying to pump up Andrew Wiggins a little bit? I'm sure they are to a certain extent. But I mean, I would say that if they go on to win a championship here, I mean, you would have to see the argument that they would have to try and keep both, even though that would be very expensive. If I had to really, though, choose one or the other, I would probably choose Jordan Poole just because of the massive potential there and what we've seen him be able to do so far in this playoffs, just scratching that surface, you know. But I mean, I don't know. At the same time, Wendy, I was watching, I was thinking about what Kirk just said about how Doncic is going to be okay. This feels like Jordan versus the Pistons. And I remember thinking in game three, when I was watching Maxi Kleber miss a lot of those threes that were open, and I was thinking, God, if they just had another big in here, and I'm sure any team would say this, who could rebound, make shots, and of course defend the rim. And I was just trying to think, like I was even thinking, like, forget about defending the rim. If they just have like somebody like Kevin Love, who could just grab a few more rebounds at these rebounds and make a couple threes from the corner, I was like, Dallas would be so much better. Because,
well, they thought they had that player on, quite frankly. Yes. They thought they had that guy.
I mean, like, who's Doncic to Scottie? Right. Who's Doncic to Scottie Pippen? Right now, it is Brunson. As good as Brunson's been, as brilliant as Brunson's been, yep, he can't be that Scottie Pippen for Doncic. They've got to find a lot more help for him. And so I remember thinking that. So now, I mean, the switch from Poole to Wiggins, but my answer to you would probably be Poole if I had to pick one.
Yeah. Let me ask you about that, Kirk, because the Warriors live in a world where, you know, their championship window extends beyond this season.
Yeah.
They're trying to win this one, and they're trying to win more. And they now live in a world where Luka Doncic is going to be a major challenge. You know, they need someone who's a big defender to deal with him. By the way, I just looked it up. Poole makes 2.1 this year, 3.9 next year. Wiggins is at 31.5 this year, 33.6 next year. But then it's the year after that those decisions will get made this summer. Knowing where the West is, what the Warriors already have on their roster, I mean, maybe they don't have to choose. But if they had to choose, you know, the reality that one of those guys can defend Luka Doncic for the foreseeable future has to figure in, right?
Yeah, I think there's normally Bob Myers making these calls, but in this case, I think you're going to have a tribal council that includes Stephen Curry, yeah, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, and Steve Kerr, who want to win more championships in the early part of the 2020s. And they're going to really favor the personnel that helps them take the most advantage, especially let's just focus on Steph, the last four or five, whatever years we have left of prime Steph Curry. Maybe it's 3 years the way this league is and the way bodies break down. But, you know, you also mentioned this is an ownership group that isn't afraid of dipping into the luxury tax. Ohm made the point they might not have to choose. So why should we make them choose if we're the Lakers? It's a very punitive luxury tax, we know, in the NBA. But I think the best choice is like, how can we get this to work? And then one other point. If I'm Andrew Wiggins and I just look at what's happened to my career, I look at that dunk I had on Luka Doncic in the conference finals that sent the whole basketball world into a frenzy, I might take a little bit less money to stay here. I have seen the other side of the fence, Brian. I have seen Minnesota. I have seen what it looks like when I'm trusted to be a number one or number two option. And geez, that wasn't that fun. This is really fun. I might win championships here, multiple championships. I might have a legacy. I might get my name in the rafters. I think there's a chance that Wiggins doesn't necessarily chase the biggest payday and the Warriors find a good way to keep both him and Jordan Poole, especially considering the fact that you brought up, Brian. Yeah, they might, they're not afraid of the luxury tax.
They better not be. Their payroll next year is probably going to approach $200 million. You know, Kevon Looney is also a free agent. I mean, he's not necessarily a big dollar, but I mean, he makes $5 million considering his value to this team and considering that Wiseman James Wiseman hasn't proven that he's ready to step into that role, you know, he's going to want to raise. And Draymond Green only has one more guaranteed year. He's got a player option. He is eligible for a contract extension too. It's not quite as pressing again, because he's got that player option, which you figure he's going to pick up. Because I think it's in the neighborhood of $25 million. Let me see here. I want to get it right. It's $27 million in 23-24. They may just assume that he could pick that up. But, you know, he technically is eligible for an extension this summer too. You know what happens, Kirk, when guys win, everybody comes yeah. walking to the door and say,
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop. All right, Omar, I hope you get a competitive game tonight. You have to go back to California anyway, right? So you might as well go out there for a game five in San Francisco and then you go back home to LA.
Hey, as long as it's not one of these, I mean, I got to tell you, those cross country trips from San Francisco to Memphis, and with Memphis, yeah. people don't, I don't think people understand this. I know people don't like to hear writers complain about travel and everything, but there's no like direct flights to Memphis. I assume that's because FedEx controls like the airspace largely during the day. And then basically you always have to connect and get in Memphis in some weird hour. I remember seeing in LA, there was one direct flight, Delta. It didn't even leave till 7:30 at night, and it landed at like 1:30 in the morning, which was so bizarre to me.
I will tell you why, because I'm an airline geek. It's because yes. Northwest Airlines and Delta Airlines merged.
Yep.
And Memphis was a hub for Northwest, and yep. it's very close to Atlanta, and you don't need two hubs in the sort of South, Southeast. And obviously Atlanta was going to win that. So Memphis's airport was gutted. As somebody who's from Cleveland, who saw this happen when United and Continental merged, Cleveland was too close to Chicago.
Rest in anyway, peace, Continental.
Anyway, that's too much boring. We talk about the NBA. Yes, trust me. But when I had to go between Phoenix and New Orleans in the first round, I felt it. And I'm already looking forward to the finals. With all due respect to Dallas, I think it's going to be Golden State and one of these teams. And the travel between Boston and San Francisco and Miami and San Francisco, especially if it gets a long series where you're going back and forth for 4, 5, 6. It's brutal. Nobody cares, but it's brutal. I mean, it's not enjoyable. Going 3 hours up and down the East Coast just because the time it takes to travel right now, but forget about that. Before we go, Kirk, I wanted to ask you about the significant news we had in the NBA front office-dom on Monday. Tim Connelly leaves the Denver Nuggets to go become the president of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Woj says it's an $8 million a year contract for $40 million, and that there's some ownership equity involved. Now, my phone immediately filled up after the Woj put that story out. What's the equity situation? The all-time equity play in this type of thing was Pat Riley back in 1995, I believe, got 10% of the Miami Heat when he came from the Knicks.
Wow.
You know, the famous sent the fax that he was resigning, which the Heat say is technically not true. And even though I just said it right then, I might get another. Anyway, it was the best deal.
New York is very sensitive to faxes, Wendy, not just Pat Riley, but Bill Belichick. Okay. So New York has gotten way too many bad faxes.
Yeah. So Mickey Arison ended up admitting tampering and paid a first round pick. It was one of the best deals he's ever made as the owner of the Heat. Riley subsequently sold almost all, if not all of that, back to the Arison family, by the way, years ago. He probably wishes he still had it, because 10%, I think it was 10%, but let's just say it was less than that. 1% of the Heat right now is, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So, the idea, this giving of equity, I don't know what the details on that are. I, you know, we're sort of in a transition moment with the Wolves, the Wolves being one of the leading payers of executives is pretty fascinating. And it was funny when they put out the press release announcing the hire, there was a quote that came from, quote, the ownership team. They've got a bunch of different owners right now, because Glenn Taylor is a longstanding owner, but he's in the middle of selling the team to Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez. So Lurie and Rodriguez are pretty much driving this, but Taylor is, you know, in the short term, still owning the team for another year. So it's awkward. Denver, I believe, was paying Tim Connelly a little over $3 million a year. They made an offer to retain him. Whatever it was, it must not have been enough. Kirk, to leave the Denver Nuggets, as somebody who worked in the front offices for years in San Antonio, What was your phone telling? What was the conversations on your phone yesterday when this went down? He took this job.
Well, I think, you know, it's a good sign for the value of executives around the league. I think this reeks to me of Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez trying to put their fingerprints on this franchise, trying to change the narrative around the Timberwolves, inject some energy, as somebody has said. But I think you nailed that. Like, the value, maybe these are the most underrated people in the NBA. You know, I had the fortune of working for RC Buford and Sean Marks and seeing the impacts of really elite executives on organizations. And you know what? This is just, Tim Connelly has built one of the best rosters in the NBA in Denver. He is a top executive, if you ask people around the league, and he got a huge payday. And this is a new ownership group in Minnesota trying to establish some sort of new elite front office vibes, and they paid for it. I think this is a good move. I think if Tim Connelly is as good as he has been in Denver, this takes that exciting young core in Minnesota, and it changes the sort of culture. I hate to use culture for the 800th time this postseason, but it's a culture play for a front office that hasn't been stable. It hasn't been recognized as great. We brought up the Wiggins situation earlier. It's kind of been all over the place. And this is a person who can bring stability and innovation and hopefully drive this Minnesota franchise into the 2020s. With some exciting young talent and continue to build around that for years to come. And I love what you said about Riley. I'll end with that. Pat Riley, to me, is proof that if you get the executive chair right in an organization, a young executive, a young issue, you can have a very stable, sustainable brand of success in the NBA. And that's the bet that Mark Lurie and this Alex Rodriguez group just made on Tim Connelly.
I will say, you know, the Nuggets, Stan Kroenke, who owns the Nuggets, he owns a bunch of sports teams. He owns the Rams. He owns the Arsenal. He owns a bunch of other things. You know, he's not really always valued executives, as evidenced by the fact that he let Masai Ujiri leave in a similar situation to go to the Raptors. I don't have data on this. I think Tim Connelly was under contract. they let him go without compensation that I'm aware of. That's, in a way, it's an incredible gift to Tim Connelly to let him leave. They gave permission for him to talk. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the Nuggets get any points for that. If I was Jokic, I wouldn't be thrilled, but
no.
They only value leadership to a point. And look, maybe Stan Josh Kroenke, you're like, we found Masai Ujiri and hired him. We found Tim Connelly and hired him. Calvin Booth is a strong candidate to be promoted. By the way, they had Arturis Kanishevis.
Yes,
right.
Was behind and, you know, got hired by the Bulls. Maybe they're just like, we'll go find another good young executive and not pay him $8 million or whatever they would have had to offer Connelly.
Yeah, I think that what they see is, and I'd be very surprised if Calvin Booth did not get this job.
Right.
I think they like Calvin a lot. I think they see what Tim established there. I do think Tim had a very good relationship there. I would probably venture to say, I don't think Tim wanted to leave, but this deal was probably a deal that he simply could not turn down.
You can't turn down. If you're making $3 million, you're doing just fine. Let's be clear in this world. But if somebody wants to 2.5 times your pay and guarantee you.
Well, money, and I mean, the equity like, too. Yeah.
Right. I don't even know what the equity is going to end up being worth, but yeah.
I would say this is interesting because Tim Connelly just traveled to Serbia with a group that included Michael Malone and a bunch of other people and to give the MVP to Nikola Jokic. And so this was a very much a family-oriented kind of culture at Denver that they were building there. Nikola Jokic is due a super max contract extension, which he will get. I don't think Nikola Jokic is going to turn that down just because Tim Connelly isn't there anymore. But I do think that Jokic has to look at this and say, well, I thought we were building something here to try one championship. And the guy that pretty much put this team together, the guy that drafted me, the guy that has found and drafted, you know, took a risk on Michael Porter Jr., you know, the guy who's built all these young players up is not here anymore. So what does that mean as far as like, if we're not going to spend to keep a guy like Tim Connelly, what does this mean moving forward of how we're going to try to basically build this championship franchise? I think probably Nikola could have, you know, legitimate questions about that. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think this story, Brian, to me is very interesting from Denver's perspective as well as Minnesota's. We've talked about how crazy the West is going to be for the next 5 years. There's contenders everywhere you look. Any sign of weakness is a big deal, especially when you're trying in this era to retain potential free agents named Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, Michael Porter Jr. Any sign of weakness or instability is bad news. And I think from Denver's perspective, they are fortunate. And obviously they seem pretty confident that Calvin Booth, I agree with him, it's his job to lose, can slide into this and sort of resume the trajectory that Denver was on. Because I'm one of the people that think if Denver's healthy, they are a championship contender. They are that good and they are that deep. Tim Connelly deserves credit for that, but he's not the only one. You mentioned Arturis, Calvin Booth, and obviously the players. Hiring Mike Malone was a great, great thing. So I think this team can still be a contender in the next few years, but it's really interesting. I think there's more uncertainty there, Brian, than there was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, the trip to Serbia. So, you know, this pursuit has been going on for some time. You know, the Nuggets got eliminated a few weeks ago. The Timberwolves were working on this deal for a while. It got public in the last 5 or 6 days, but it's been going on. The Nuggets surprised Nikola Jokic with his MVP trophy. Their front, Mike Malone, Tim Connelly, some members of their organization flew over there and came to Sombor, Serbia, to give him his award. I mean, everybody knew he was going to win. Even Joel Embiid knew. I know people think that he didn't know, but of course Joel knew. You know, everybody on that party, party who went over there knew that Tim Connelly might be leaving. And so I'm sure that Connelly had discussions with Jokic. I'm sure Jokic was not caught off guard by any of this. So, you know, getting that contact, if I were the Nuggets, and I would make making another trip over to Serbia later this year to to make sure that that was all settled up. So that's important, but we'll see how that develops. Hey, thanks guys. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Adi, our video producer. Thank you to Daniel Dopp from the Fantasy Football Podcast, who's filling in for Jackson. Jackson's taking some time off right now. So thanks for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you later this week.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.